Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Sophie, I am so pleased to say that the sponsor of today's podcast is Julien Bruno, who've been creating, developing, and producing naturally plant-based foods right here in London since 2022. Sophie, I've tried Julien Bruno before and loved it, and I know you have too. And I have to say that they really do take the place of a creamy Italian burrata.
Julien Bruno are making the most exciting plant-based food with an award-winning range of cheeses made each week in fresh batches. They've got their creamy Barella and super stracchia, perfect for popping in your salads or on your pizzas, as well as their lightly whipped cremata spread, which I love spreading on toast or bagels. Trust me, it is all so damn good. My favourite plant-based cheese by far.
But don't just take it from the home cooks. Julien Bruno also served in restaurants across the country, including by the head pastry chef at Harrods. It's not just a vegan alternative. It is a true gastronomic delight that stands out on its own.
So if you haven't already, go and try Julien Bruno's brilliant plant-based cheeses. They're available in a range of fantastic independent retailers, delis and restaurants across the country, plus stores such as Planet Organic, Whole Foods, Selfridges, and online at Ocado.
Go get it.
Hello and welcome to I'll Have What She's Having, a food and drink podcast from me, Sophie Wybird.
And me, Hannah Crosby. Every week, Sophie and I sit down to dinner. She makes a dish, I pair a wine, and we put the world to rights. This week, we pair pan con tomato with a sparkling tea.
And we talk Reply Guys and the Great British Bake Off with cook and TV personality Christelle Pereira.
Hello! Welcome, welcome, welcome back. We are not alone. We are not alone in this room. This week, I'm going straight into it.
Sounds like there's a ghost. we're doing a seance. And
it's Christelle
in the
room with us right now. This week, we welcome cook and TV personality Christelle Pereira. I should have actually asked you if that's the correct way to pronounce
no,
your name.
You actually got it spot on. Like, I usually panic before people say my name, but that was
Pereira. Is it? Do you get Pereira?
Yeah, or like Pereira, like everything. Or like Crystal instead of Christelle.
Christelle.
That's the worst, but you
smashed it. Okay. So let's see how I do for the rest of it. I did lift it off Amazon, so I'm hoping it's all factual. Raised by Kenyan-born Portuguese-Goan parents, Christelle's passion for exciting flavour combinations led her to reaching the grand final of none other than the Great British Bake Off. Ever heard of it? Not me. In 2021, since then, in 2 short years, she's cooked on shows like Good Morning America, Sunday Brunch, The Today Show, and TV's Lorraine, personal highlight, and has just come off the back of releasing her first ever book, Flavor Kitchen, and is coming to us hot for an American book tour. Welcome so much. Welcome so much. Welcome to the podcast. I was like, this is going Welcome so much to the podcast, Christelle.
We're starting to mean to go, on with all the
Yeah, I love it. The cameras are playing. We're loving it.
I'm having a bit of a chaotic day. Thank you for being here.
Listen, I'm here for the chaos, but thank you for having me. This is a great setting. I feel right at home. I'm very comfy in my little swivelly chair. But...
So you're literally a few days off the back of your American tour. Yes. How has that been?
Oh my gosh, it was... Honestly, one of the highlights of my career, just for so many reasons. A, the food, because I'm selfish and I love eating and I'm very greedy. And I was doing a lot of solo dining out there, which was my first experience of solo dining, but I loved it. And I'll talk a bit more about this, but that was great. Obviously, meeting people, I did lots of book signings and meets and greets. And I think so much now happens like over the TV screen or through social media, and actually to meet people, like it's very surreal. And just to see people really excited to see you and holding your book, that's honestly, again, just such a highlight and just makes my job very worthwhile. And just being able to kind of travel around. I've definitely been running off adrenaline for a while, but I think towards the end, when I started to get a little bit tired, it was all kind of sinking in. I was like, oh, this is quite emotional.
Yeah.
But no, it was great. I really, really liked it.
Oh, you so deserve it. So Flavour Kitchen came out, is it like 2 months ago now? A month?
Yeah, it came out at the end of May in the UK and then the end of June in the US.
Amazing.
Oh, straight to the US. That's incredible. Usually, I don't know how it normally works, but don't you usually publish one place first and then you see how sales go and then you publish it elsewhere if the sales are there?
Yeah, I think with me, but I've basically got a really big US audience as well. So I think my publishers are like, we'll just... Yeah.
It's a no-brainer. Yeah. It's a no-brainer.
That's incredible.
Already a global superstar.
Oh, She doesn't need to wait.
But Flavour Kitchen is a beautiful, beautiful book. You should be honestly so proud of it. There's obviously half of it, which is incredible savoury stuff. And then the second half is more the sweet things, which lots of people would be more familiar with your cooking from. There's one in particular that has been really on my mind. And my boyfriend's been talking about it a lot. He flicked through it and was like, okay, so when are we making that? It's the chai tres leches cake.
Oh, yeah. It's a personal favourite.
Okay, so I've picked one of the best ones.
Yes!
Excellent.
Yes,
excellent.
Yes.
Expect many more big flavours and exciting combinations like that in Christelle's book. If you're a fan of food that tastes great, then definitely go and buy it. How was the writing process?
Do you know what? It was actually, I really enjoyed it. I think developing the recipes was probably the best part of it. And so it's really funny. So anytime I used to think of a recipe idea, I don't know how you do it, but I WhatsApp myself. So I have a WhatsApp conversation with myself and it will just say things like, chai tres leches cake, or just be like flavour combination. So yuzu, white chocolate, or tahini and miso. And I write these things down. I WhatsApp myself. One day, this WhatsApp conversation got so out of hand. I was like, it's quite embarrassing if someone looks at my phone. So I was like, let me put it into a spreadsheet, being ex-corporate and all that. So put it into a spreadsheet. Then the spreadsheet was getting very long. So I was like, let me split it into two tabs. I'll do a sweet tab and a savoury tab. So I had basically this bank of sweet combinations and savory combinations. When it came to writing my book, I was like, I literally have the perfect sort of premise for my book.
The book is here.
Yeah, I've got my book. So
organized.
Yeah, which is great. And I love a good color coordination thing. So I basically had and my book is actually color coordinated. But so when I was testing the recipes, it would be marked as like red if like first time to attempt, like definitely to do again. Orange if we're almost there. Green if we're like, go. Yes, you'd say.
Oh, yes, I'm familiar with that. The color coding helps.
Yeah.
Traffic light system.
Yeah.
The green makes you feel good.
So good.
It's gamifying your task.
But you know what it is? I'm such a perfectionist. So there, I think a lot of them I marked as orange because I was like, maybe I'll just do one more test just to make sure.
Yeah.
But I think that's what happened, especially when you're, I think what I realized is when you're writing a book, which is like a cookbook, it's not like you're writing a fiction novel. There's so much more pressure because this is an instruction-based book. You're putting, like, it's so much responsibility. Like, if your recipe's wrong, that's your fault. So you have to make sure that everything is so accurate. And so I retested things so many times because I was just so paranoid because it could be like a fat finger error or something. You never know. So
accidental zero on the end of an ingredient and someone's put like 600 grams of sugar in something.
And you're like, but why?
Yeah. Sorry, I've just been trying to figure out what fat finger error means and I've just figured it out. That's really, I'm going to be using that.
I think I got that from finance. Could you say that in trading? If like a fat finger error where you like put like a zero at the end of a trade. So like, I don't know, 1,000 becomes 10,000. But I think you can also say it with...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, yeah, absolutely.
I thought you meant like, why does that mean you won't stir the ingredients correctly?
Your hand just can't quite grasp that spoon properly.
Oh, bless.
So you've mentioned that you had a finance background.
Yes.
And then that all changed in, was it 2021?
So actually, a few days ago was my 1-year anniversary since I quit my job.
So congrats.
Oh my gosh.
But so yeah, I actually, so Bake Off finished airing in November 2021. And I remember thinking to myself, okay, then obviously all this work starts flying in, I get an agent and it's all very exciting. But I remember thinking, look, I've always wanted to work in food. I'm fascinated by food. I've been obsessed with food the moment I exited the womb. But it was very much like a dream, unattainable career. Like, I mean, who's ever going to be able to get into the industry? So when Bake Off finished, I was like, oh my gosh, could this actually happen? But then I'm quite a pessimist in life. So I was like to myself, okay, well, realistically, this might not happen. Let me just kind of keep going at my day job, just see if I've got a strong enough pipeline, if I can actually see this turning into a career, because I just don't want to quit my job blindly and be like, whoa, I've been on TV, it's all it's
you know
all
what it
happen.
Reminds me of? It reminds me of like the, not to compare or anything, but it kind of reminds me of the ex Love Islanders pipeline. Like you come out and you get like loads and loads of attention.
Yeah. And it's like, is this going to be sustainable or is it?
Yeah.
Because it can very much be like a, you know, okay, you've come off a show and it's like, okay, cool, everyone loves you for like a month and then the interest goes when the next season comes out. And so there was definitely a lot of fear in that. But I kind of kept going for like 7 months in my day job, probably a few months too many. Because
when I first met you, you were still doing day job and all your other food stuff on the side. And I had no idea how you were doing it. You were so busy already.
I was just, and I think I was basically working 2 full-time jobs. All of my annual leave I used to do all this other stuff on the side, which A, meant, I mean, I wasn't really getting any rest. I was working 2 full-time jobs, but also it meant that this career that I really wanted was like an afterthought, because my job wasn't a 9-to-5 job. It was like 8 to 8, sometimes longer. So I'd finish a busy day of work and then rush to do something else or like test a recipe, or I'd have to take time off to go for a shoot. And also I couldn't even pull a sickie, because if I'm like, oh, I'm sicker than I'm on TV, or I've got public Instagram, they would see. I basically just, and it got to a point where I was A, running out of annual leave. And I think it just got to a point where I thought, okay, I just need to, I think now's the time.
Just rip the band-aid off.
Yeah, exactly. But it's really scary.
It's paid off.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, touch wood.
Yeah.
Getting back to April. No, but yeah, so far it's been good. But like, yeah, I love it. And I think since I quit my job, I've just felt so, it sounds really over the top, but I feel like so myself. And I think being able to work in a creative job that you genuinely love, it's obviously, it's a place of privilege. Like I kind of count my blessings every day, because like turning your hobby into a job is like, it's wild. Like,
it's the dream.
It's the dream. So I wake up every day and it's so fun. I love it. But I've also had to draw a distinction between cooking and baking as my day job and cooking and baking as a hobby. And that has also massively helped, because I think that is where it can become very overwhelming and you just never really take a break. So now like I will kind of say to myself, okay, that's it. Like phone away. You're just going to cook nice little fridge raid dinner.
You're not writing anything
down.
Nothing's being measured.
Yeah. And sometimes if I make something, I'm like, oh, this is really nice. I'll be like, okay, maybe I'll retest it another day. But like, it's really, really helped, because sometimes it's really weird after a long day of either recipe testing or doing a supper club or whatever, I'll come home and be like, I just want to switch off and make dinner.
Yeah.
And it's actually really weird. And my family's like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, no, but cooking has always been very therapeutic for me. And same with baking. So it's actually nice that I can now draw that distinction as well.
It's a really important one to do, I think.
Yeah.
I'm still getting
I was going to say, how are you finding it?
Terrible. I'm so bad at it. I'm trying to be better.
Yeah.
You do have to carve out, like when you're having like lunch with your family on a Sunday, it's like, this isn't content. This is just lunch with people that you love.
Yeah.
This is not.
Yeah, you have to tell
I don't
yourself.
Need to take a photo of any of this. Correct. I just need to sit and be present and not be thinking like, oh, I wish I'd put it in that.
How do I monetize this?
Yeah, Dad, switch it on.
My gosh. When your job is social media, it's so much more difficult. Like, obviously, as you say, it's an incredible position of privilege to be in, but it takes its toll, man. And it's like it's also like one of the relatively easiest jobs there is out there. And I'm not denying that for a second, but like, yeah, when do you switch off? When do you know like where to draw the line? I think also with something like, I talk quite a lot about working in food and drink and how you're expected to live like this hedonistic lifestyle. Mm. And you're meant to like eat and drink, and then sometimes your body doesn't feel your own. Like, and also people who look like they've like eaten and drunk shit loads like aren't necessarily like the bodies that are celebrated in the industry either.
Yeah.
I find it so interesting,
Yeah, it's a really good point. And so, the part about social media. So for me, social media, I very much treat it as a job, which really helps, because then it means that I don't spend my whole life on it. Like I use it to post, like, it's mainly food stuff or like big life updates, but I'm very much like, okay, if I'm going to go, like, so if I'm out with my friends, I'm not like documenting the whole dinner on my phone. Like, yeah, yeah. I always take photos of my food, but I just do that anyway because I like to keep a, just like a little repository of the things I eat.
Yeah.
But I'm like, and I think it just helps because my whole life isn't on my public Instagram, which I think can be very dangerous. And that is when you kind of start to lose a sense of your actual life because everything is online. So for me, like my job, my social media is like a part of my job. It's more like a portfolio almost. Like that
is where I put myself. That's a good way to view it. That's a really good way to view it.
And I think that really helps me to like be like, okay, this isn't my life. It's just a section of my job. And the stuff about eating, kind of eating what you want and like bodies not being celebrated, I think is also a really good point. And I think I am very much an intuitive eater. So I just eat what I want. And it's so funny because I get so many people being like, oh, like, do you eat all this food or how do you eat this food? And, you know, whatever, like, do you work out? And I'm like,
they mean it as a compliment, but it's like really strange thing to say.
Yeah. And like people mean well, but I think for me, I'm just like, eat what you want. And like, it shouldn't matter. Like, I don't work out to burn off my food. I work out so I'm not panting when I walk up the stairs. Like that for me is like, and I also don't really enjoy exercise. So I just find exercise when I can, but just to do it so I can kind of enjoy it to stay fit. But it's taken me a while to get there. I think social media and a lot of stuff, and I think, I hate to say it, but also to be fair, men experience it as well. But there are just there's a lot of toxicity in terms of like body image and what you should eat. But I think I'm now at a point where I'm like, I'm going to eat what I want when I want. But sometimes that might be like, oh, I want to eat a salad. So for example, I've like finished my trip in America having eaten incredible food, but a lot of heavy food, a lot of ice cream.
Yeah.
And I literally was on the plane back like, I just want some crisp lettuce. Like it would be really nice right now, like a big bowl of like strawberries. So like there are just certain things you crave. But like if I'm out and I'm like, oh, I really want the cheese toastie, I will eat the cheese toastie. But I also think food is, and obviously I think we all think the same, like food is such a big part of life. So when you're eating out, like you want to eat the good food. Why would I go to a restaurant and like order the healthiest thing on the menu when there is something incredible that I'll never get anywhere else?
Why are you spending money on not having a nice time?
Exactly.
Especially when you're traveling into places that you may not necessarily go to again. Yeah. Like on this American tour, I'm sure you've hit up some spots that maybe it was the first time you've been in certain cities. Like what were the highlights of places you went, and also importantly, things that you ate, like three things you ate on the trip.
This is so hard.
Okay. Very good question.
So, oh my God, there were so many great things. Okay, in New York, I mean, the food there is amazing and I had so much good food. This trip, the highlight, there's a place called Thai Diner. Have you been?
I've not, but I've heard incredible things.
Oh my gosh, everything was incredible. So I think everything we ate was really good, but it's the sort of like Thai fusion restaurant. We got this egg roll wrap, but it's basically like a roti. It's like really flaky roti, like a fluffy egg, this sausage flavored with all these like Thai spices, a bit of chili oil. Oh my gosh, it was amazing. Like every bite was just like a flavor explosion in my mouth. It was so good. So that in New York. Then in San Francisco, I went to this bakery called Bread Belly and it was like this it was like a Pan-Asian fusion bakery because it had some Korean stuff and they had some Japanese stuff. I got this cheese toastie. It was toasted milk bread, gochujang mayo, like a mixture of mushrooms. It had like shimeji, oyster, like everything. American cheese and mozzarella and then some other like pickled cabbage.
I'm really salivating.
That sounds amazing.
Because I was solo dining, I sat there. I got this and there's also this like yuzu Americano, also really interesting. And I just sat there by myself. And usually when you get a big sandwich, you kind of share it with someone else. But I was like, guess I'm eating the whole thing. And I sat there just eating it, like closing my eyes, like, oh my gosh, this is so good. That was incredible. And then the third thing, there are so many, but LA, so I didn't realize this, I'm just very naive, is the place to go for Mexican food. So it's everyone's like, you have to eat. And oh my gosh. So I went by myself to these two little taco trucks. One place I had birria tacos, but I got this goat birria taco and with like the consomme and just sat there in just every bite was like the meat was falling apart in my mouth, the cheese, the crispy taco, the little pickled red onions, everything was just like just popping off my mouth. And then I went to this other place called Mariscos Jaliscos or something and they did like fish tacos and it was like such a contrast. It was like this, I got a crispy prawn taco and it was like raw prawns, like just in a bit of like lime juice and stuff with like, oh my gosh, I just can't explain, but it was like aguachile, which is like their spicy like...
It's kind of like spicy watery.
Yeah, and it was just every bite you was like fresh, like jalapenos, coriander, the fresh seafood. And I just sat there eating it like with like taco juice running down my leg, and it was amazing.
The produce out there just tastes so different.
Yeah.
You could try and make the same thing here, and like the limes don't taste the same, the prawns don't taste the same.
Well, so controversially, I never really opt for Mexican food when I'm in London. I just...
We've talked about this before. Yeah.
Yeah. I love like Middle Eastern food or like Pan Asian and stuff. But if someone's like, what do you want to eat? I will never suggest Mexican food. But if I'm in America, Mexican food is really, really good out there. So,
unreal.
Yeah.
I would love to know your thoughts on solo dining. Me and Hannah were actually just talking about this. I'm trying to get over my fear of eating out alone. And it sounds like on your book tour, you were doing lots of it. How did you find it?
So my fear with solo dining is basically mainly that I like eating out with people because I get to order loads of food and share it.
This is exactly what Sophie was saying. Yes.
And like that for me is the reason why I don't solo dine, because I'm greedy and I'm selfish and I want to eat everything on the menu. So I need someone to eat it with.
And you don't want the waiter to be like, okay, ordered 10 dishes.
And also the waste. The waste as well. Yeah.
But as long as you can find a way not to waste it, just go out. And I remember, so the first time I did it, I went to a bakery, and it's this place called Libre Bakery in New York, and it's this amazing fusion bakery, and they had so many incredible things, and I was just like, damn it, why didn't I bring someone? But I'm just going to get three pastries, which I think is doable. Yeah. So I got one savory, two sweet, all very different. And I sat there by myself, and I was just, when you appreciate your food, which you do, it's actually really nice, because A, you can go to where you want, eat what you want, and you don't have your friends being like, Christelle, why are we traveling for 1 hour to eat a pastry? But that is the stuff I love doing, and some of my friends hate it. So I was literally, what was so nice about it was I was eating what I wanted when I wanted. And because I'm such a food-centric person, my trips, even though I was on a work trip, I was trying to plan my whole days around where I was eating. And I don't mind traveling for food. I will travel 1 hour, 2 hours to eat one tiny little taco if I know it's going to be the best taco of my life. And you can do that because you have no rules. No one is... You don't have to make any compromise. You don't have to go to a random fancy rooftop because your friend wants to go there. You can literally go to your little hole-in-the-wall places. And I think the more I did it, the more comfortable I got with it. And I just loved it. And I think at the beginning, I was quite self-conscious, like, oh, are people judging me? And I was like, actually, people aren't really looking. And if they're looking, they're probably quite jealous. Like, wow, this girl gets to eat all this food by herself. So I actually really, really enjoyed it.
And you're also never going to see them again. That's what I always say. I'm like, you're never going to see any of these people again.
But also, like, what is someone going to... Like, realistically, if someone sees someone eating three pastries, like, what are they going to say? Like, she shouldn't be eating that. Like, if I saw that personally, I would be quite jealous. Like, oh, her food looks really good. Because everywhere I went, I was eating very good food. And I just sat there and I was just smiling to myself, like having the best time ever. So I loved it. And I think the more you do it, the more you get into the zone and the more you appreciate your food, because sometimes when you're at a meal, you're like chatting so much to the other person that you're like sort of chatting, oh, taking a bite.
You're not actually paying attention.
Yeah.
And I feel like you're not eating mindfully when you're out for dinner with friends on a Friday night.
Eating with your mouth full.
You're just like wiping your fingers through plates and you're doing it appreciatively, but you're not paying attention to the food much as you might be if you
Exactly. And also you then realise, because when you eat alone, you're not having a conversation with someone, so your meal times are shorter as they are. So I would literally sit down to eat and be like, oh, actually, I've got an hour. So then I would like take a bite, pause, be like, oh, like have a look at what's in this. Oh, this is really nice. Have a sip of my drink. Be like, oh, this is amazing. Go for another bite. And you just like, honestly, like it sounds like so dramatic, but you actually just appreciate what you're eating and you just have more time because you're sort of sitting there. And sometimes I would be like, wow. And like speak to myself and be like, this is amazing. I was like, what's wrong with me? But like, you can do that. It was honestly, I would love to be like a fly on the wall looking at myself eating, because sometimes I literally be like gasping like, this is amazing.
I can see the headlines now. Oh my God, that reminds me. When I was looking up to find some bios, there was a headline that was so clickbaity. It was hilarious.
Oh, no.
It says, Christelle Pereira confirms everything we always suspected about Noel Fielding.
No,
and it literally says, and then I'm like, oh my God, because like the title image is just him looking a bit tired and unshaven.
No.
And the article's literally, he's really nice, actually.
Hey, honestly, I hate clickbait. Do you know what the worst thing is? So like, I'm quite an expressive person with my face. So there were lots of like photos taken of me, like looking like in Bake Off, looking very shocked. Like
they always do that.
Do you know what they've done? So BuzzFeed have now taken that photo of me and they have used it as clickbait on all of these random articles. I've got nothing to do with me. So it'll be like, the 10 worst things that a bride has done to her bridesmaids.
And it's a gift for you.
And I'm like, what is going on? And they've done it for like the 10 worst FBI mistakes ever made in history with a photo of me. And I'm like, what is going on?
Being falsely accused of a lot of stuff you've not
yeah,
done.
Yeah, like, guys, I am not associated with this, please. Yes.
That is so funny. Yeah. Oh my God. I really want to find this. I
realise we've not eaten or drank anything.
Oh my gosh.
We've been getting so excited and getting straight into the meaty stuff that we haven't even cracked open the delicious bottle we've got with us.
Oh my gosh, this looks lovely.
Han, what we got?
So, Christelle does not drink, which means that I got to experiment, have a little bit of fun, but also slide into the DMs of a non-alcoholic drinks producer that I absolutely adore. Oh. They are real drinks, but I pronounce them as Real drinks.
Real.
Like Real Madrid.
Love it.
Real drinks. They're absolutely incredible. I went to go and visit their fermentary, I suppose, a couple of months ago, based out in the English countryside. Absolutely beautiful. They make all of these fermented sparkling teas, essentially. So they work very closely with farmers in India. They usually kind of get like the first flushes of all of the teas. They combine them and blend them in these gorgeous, massive stainless steel vats. And they are so beautiful and gorgeous. They are such a great wine replacement.
Is it similar to kombucha then, if it's like a fermented?
Yeah, it's kind of like a fermented kombucha. So I think their brand name used to be Real Kombucha, but now they've moved to like Real Drinks.
Oh, nice.
Because it's less of a kombucha, more of a, yeah, more of a tea. But it is,
yum.
This is kind of like akin to maybe like a sparkling Chardonnay, so that's something that spent time on lees. It's like very aromatic, floral, very juicy, very peachy. Oh, I'm gonna crack open the bottle and hope that it doesn't fizz over.
Oh my gosh, I remember once doing this. I was on holiday once with like loads of friends, and stupidly someone decided to get kombucha as a mixer. This was like when I used to drink, and I didn't realize it was fizzy, so I was shaking the bottle, opened it, and literally pour kombucha everywhere all over this guy's flat. And I was like, I'm just going to leave now. I'm so sorry. I know.
Ooh, yeah, I'm really into having kombucha instead of alcohol in the summer now. There's like loads of brands that do them, really beautiful bottles like this.
Yeah.
They're called LA Brewery. Have you had their one?
Oh my gosh, incredible. They're so,
their
so
rosé
good.
One.
Yes, is like, rosé is amazing.
So lovely. And like, yeah, this is a similarly delicious one, but the same kind of vibe of like,
yeah, the
fancy
bottle
looks like champagne.
Because I think like, I stopped drinking like just over a year ago, and not like there wasn't any specific thing, but I was just, I mean, I've got long COVID, my body just gets really exhausted and whatever. And I was just a bit like, oh, do I really, I feel like the buzz of drinking for me, it wasn't really, thank you. I just wasn't really like that into it.
Thank you.
but I think more of it
thank
was just, I think a lot of drinking is actually kind of you have a drink in your hand and whatever. And so I was like, let me just come off it. And I actually didn't really miss it, but I'll still put alcohol in like my cooking and my baking. But now, like, if I go out, like, stuff like this, like, I love a sparkling kombucha. And it's just sometimes just something nice to sip on.
Yeah.
Without actually, I just don't really like the effects of alcohol on me.
I feel like in the last few years, there have become so many brands doing amazing alcohol-free spirits, beers, wines, things like this kombucha. And also just, like, alcohol-free cocktail making.
Yeah.
I feel like has got really good.
Really, really good. Yeah. Like, that before, I would never get a mocktail because it would always just be really
just
sugary
juice.
Stuff. Yeah.
It's just
and I'm
juice.
Like, I never
get
it.
£9 for juice.
Yeah.
You insane?
Whereas now, like, some of the mocktail menus, I'm like, oh, okay, this sounds really nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't like things that, as a baker, weirdly, I don't like things that are too sickly sweet. I like just things that are quite balanced and quite fresh, especially with drinks. So I would never go for mocktail, but now I'm finding there's a lot of really nice mocktail stuff, and like this is great.
But that's why, like, I made the point when we were at the distillery, like, usually when you have non-alcoholic wines, usually they've been like de-alcoholized. So because the alcohol burn isn't there anymore, it can feel really sugary. It becomes really obvious, like, how much of a wine is sugar.
Yeah.
So you kind of almost need like that. There's another really interesting non-alcoholic drinks brand that add chili oil to kind of recreate the alcohol burn.
What are they called? Blurred Vines?
Blurred Vines, yeah.
Oh my gosh, I want to try this.
It's really good. But this is absolutely amazing as well. It's like balanced, right? It's fresh. Like it's in the same way that wine is fruity over sweet.
It's kind of got that dryness, I guess, from the tannins in the tea.
Yeah, exactly. No, I really love this.
And to eat with our kombucha.
Not that I've been staring at it the whole time.
Yeah, this is classic movie magic where we make food and it sits getting like a bit cold in front of us because we get too overexcited and chat. But because I knew we were having something that had kind of like champagne-y notes to it, mm-hmm. I thought I'd go for something cheesy. But it's lucky because today's sponsor is Julian Bruno,
who makes the Julian best Bruno.
Plant-based cheeses. So I was like, well, great, I'll just do one of those. So wait. We've got some harissa pan con tomate. We're deep in tomato season, so I thought good to get those guys involved. So I've literally just grated some big beefy tomatoes, salted them in a sieve over a bowl to take out some of the liquid. I've added some of the liquid back in because I do like it to be a bit soft.
Yeah.
As well as olive oil and rose harissa paste. The Bellazoo one in this case, because it is the best one. And then mix that all together, check the seasoning, and then just put it on a nice olive oily sourdough toast that's been rubbed with a bit of garlic.
So then
I've just put some of that Julian Bruno Super Stracchia on top, which is like their plant-based stracciatella.
I'm excited to try it.
You're speaking to me.
I haven't had any of their stuff in so long.
It's so delicious. Oh my God, go in. Go in.
This is the part of the podcast we all eat with our mouths open.
My goodness, I cannot wait. Yum, yum, yum.
I can't tell if our toast has now gone a bit soggy with the tomatoes. I love that cheese so much.
Wow. Do you know what? Because I'm quite sceptical about plant-based alternatives to things like vegan cheese or vegan ice cream.
Same. So many of them have just folded. Like several companies have just gone under.
They've like reduced their rate. I know like Heck sausages have stopped making most of their vegan sausages and stuff.
Oh, really?
So I think there was a big boom where people were making loads and they've realised the appetite is actually less than they suspected.
But that's really good because I think usually with like a vegan cheese or a vegan ice cream, for me, I'm like, you can taste that it's not real.
It tastes like coconut.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Most of them, they just taste coconutty and I don't want it to taste of coconut.
I want it to taste like cheese. But that's so good. And I remember I was in, when I was in America, I went to an ice cream because I'm obsessed with ice cream. Like it's actually quite unhealthy. Like I was having like 6 scoops of ice cream a day because I was having 2 portions, some after lunch, some after dinner. And obviously because I was solo dining, I was like, well, I guess I'll get 3 scoops myself because I want to try so many flavors. But I went to this one place and I was obviously like sampling them all. And he was like, do you want to try our vegan one? I was like, yeah, go on. And it was a vegan blueberry pie. And I was one of my favorite flavors. So I got that as one of my main scoops. It was delicious.
What was it made with, you know?
So that one was actually, it was called a coconut blueberry pie. So that one was coconutty, but on purpose. And that was really, really good. But I also went to a really good place in Seattle. And it was called, what was it called? It's going to annoy me. Let me find it.
Go on.
It was really, really good. And all this place was like very big on like basically actually the very healthy route with like everything's kind of, well, a lot of the stuff is made with like without refined sugar and stuff, which again sort of freaks me out because I'm a bit like, ah, but it was so good. The flavor I had, oh no, this isn't going to load. Well, I'll find it later. But the one I had, it was flavored with pine. It was pine and smoked vanilla ice cream with cardamom and maca shortbread cookies. I don't know what they did, but it was creamy. It wasn't too sweet. It was smoky. It was like fragrant. It was amazing. Oh, but like all of their flavors
so
were like
clever.
But I like the way they did it because it was very plant forward. So they kind of just put stuff together to make vegan ice cream. It was all based around healthy ingredients, which were naturally vegan, which is the stuff I prefer anyway when it comes to vegan food.
Totally. Vegan food is naturally occurring super delicious lots of the time. And it can be really hard to get processed products trying to emulate other things that taste as good as like a chickpea can taste.
Oh my God.
I really think Julian Bruno is like one of the only brands that I really back.
I'm
you
so
do
impressed.
It.
In terms of cheese, like, yeah, it tends to be a bit plasticky. In terms of like meat substitutes, I went to an event where they 3D print meat.
I remember this.
Yeah. Yeah. Redefine meat. Like, it's like this. You can get like a shank.
Oh my God, it looks so meaty.
It's so meaty. And they had like, what do you call it? Chimichurri steak kind of just like being passed around.
How does it work when you 3D print meat?
I suppose you just have the fibers and you...
Yeah, I have no idea.
That's wild.
My teeny brain can't compute.
Yeah, I'm literally like, what? I can't.
I'm trying to figure out.
Did it taste like actual meat?
It tasted like actual meat. It was insane. So yeah, you can get the tenderloin, the strip loin, the beef flank, not a shank.
So
incredible.
Controversially, that's quite controversial.
Go on.
I'm just not a fake meat kind of girl. I'm not a seitan girl.
So that's okay. I think lots of people would agree with you there.
I think for me, like actually vegan cheese, I think on the dairy side, I'm less fussed because a lot of it is naturally made anyway. And I think this is very much my own personal opinion because I eat meat, so I don't see it from a vegan's point of view. But I'm just like, if I'm going to eat meat, I'd rather know what I'm eating than eat something that's a bit more processed.
Totally.
But I love naturally vegan stuff. So if I'm going to eat a vegan burger, I want to eat like something that's got mushrooms or like it's like a nice veggie patty with beans and whatever in it, rather than have something that emulates meat. Because then I'm like, if I'm going to eat a meat burger, I'll just eat a meat burger. But that's because I eat meat.
Like my sister who's been vegan, she's been veggie since she was like 11. So she's been veggie for nearly 20 years. Mm. And she's been vegan for a lot of that time as well. She says that the ones that are really meaty do not appeal to her at all.
Really?
But I think it's because... She hasn't eaten meat so long that it feels really uncomfortable.
Fine, yeah.
She's like, I don't want my food to taste like meat.
Mm.
I want it to taste good.
Yeah.
And the fact that it resembles meat so closely is actually makes it quite uncomfortable to consume.
Maybe it's for people that have been eating meat and to kind of like wean them off, I suppose.
I think
like breast milk formula or something like that. It's just like...
No, I do get it. I obviously get why people eat it because obviously for someone who is like, stopped eating meat because they wanted to do something good for the environment. It might not be that they didn't like the taste of it, so they still want to eat it. So I do get it from a vegan's point of view, but for me personally, as like a meat eater, I'm just going to eat the beef burger.
Yeah. If you had to choose one meat to eat forever and you had to banish all the other ones,
one animal to save.
Oh, that's...
All the other animals are dead. Which animal do you
it's
save?
It's a hard one because... So I usually eat chicken most often, but like my favorite meat's probably lamb. But then that's more of like I have it on a special occasion.
Yeah.
But that is obviously, I think that's the tastiest. But then do I save the tastiest cut of meat that I eat like once a month? Or do I go for like the...
Go for the one who's good with everything, the all-rounder.
Yeah, I think the chicken, because we have a lot of chicken curry, chicken biryani. Like you can do like chicken kebabs, chicken skewers, like breaded chicken. Yeah, chicken. Just because even though I prefer like the lamb... We just eat so much chicken.
Yeah.
And chicken thighs. Chicken thighs, by the way. Chicken thighs save lives. you will never catch me using chicken breast in any recipe.
I think I would only use a chicken breast for like an escalope.
Oh, yeah.
That's like the one occasion that I would reach for a chicken breast over a thigh.
Am I being a moron? I only use chicken breasts. Am I being stupid?
Oh, no, not at all.
No. What's the beef against chicken?
So chicken breasts.
What's the beef against chicken?
So they're way less fatty than thighs, which generally means less flavour. It means they dry out more quickly when you cook them.
Yeah.
So thighs stay juicier and more flavour. It's like the white meat versus the brown meat on the roast.
So their thighs are cheaper, they're tastier, they're juicier, they're harder to overcook. So for me, it's just always a no-brainer. Like curries, thighs, chicken thighs.
But breasts, I think people generally still get quite icked by brown meat a lot of the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like the general consensus of people in the world is still that breast is best.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
the thighs save lives.
The thighs save lives. There you go.
I like that. I wanted to actually ask you, we were talking a little bit about it before we started recording, but I find the Great British Bake Off pipeline so fascinating because a lot of people like work in the industry and then they build their way up and then they do their first bit of TV and they find out whether they like it or not.
Mm.
Whereas you're plunged straight in at the deep end. How prepared did you feel for it? Was it something that you always knew you would end up doing, being on telly?
Oh my gosh, no. So obviously, I didn't think I was going to get on the show, first of all. So I applied.
What's the application process like?
Oh my gosh, it's like 10 stages. So you have like a written interview, then you have like a telephone call, then you have another call, then you have a screen test and you get invited for an in-person audition. Then you've got to like cook and you've got to bake and talk at the same time whilst being filmed. Then you've got to do a health assessment, a psychotherapy assessment, so many things. But basically, I wasn't going to apply. And then I was doing a bit of research and actually found out that a lot of people, past contestants, like applied three times before they got on. So I was like, okay, fine. I'll apply this year, get rejected. And maybe by my third attempt, I'll be more likely to get on. By that point, I'll have three more years of baking experience under my belt. So I applied, genuinely did think I'd get on. And then I got on.
Oh my God.
But I was panicked. And every time I was getting through to like the next stage in the application process, my mum was like, Christelle, like, are you sure you're not going to get on because you're not ready? I was like, no, don't worry, mum, I'm not going to get on. Like, it's fine. Because we were all just very panicked because like, I was not ready for this.
They're like, this is going to make brilliant TV.
I know. So bad. So when I got on, I panicked because I was like, I'm going to embarrass myself on national TV. Like, I'm not ready. Like, my baking is so not up to scratch. But in terms of like the TV side, I basically went into it saying to myself, my only assignment on the show is to bake. I'm not here to be a certain way for TV.
And I think you can tell when there are people that come on and they're like, people are here to see, but they think that people are here to see them. Yeah. They're not doing the baking first.
But I also just think you're not able to concentrate because it can get very overwhelming because you're doing a very stressful bake. You've then got so many cameras in your face. You've got a producer talking to you the whole time. You've got the judge and the presenters there as well. So there's so much to focus on. So I was like, I'm going to focus on what I've been told to do, which is make my little showstopper and get on with it. And if there are cameras, cool, like let the cameras take what they want. I'm going to chat to my producer and just have a merry old chat about what I'm doing. And that's it. And I think that really helped me focus on what I was doing and actually just sort of letting the cameras take what they wanted. And so I never actually found the cameras very stressful. Apart from when things go wrong, you have every single camera in your face because obviously they want to capture when your chocolate's melting or your cake's collapsing. But even then, I still had to try and block them out. So I remember I was making a cake and it was very hot and it's going a little bit wonky and I'm like, keep going. And I just had all these cameras in my face, but my coping mechanism was talking to myself, which a lot of the bakers like realize. So I would just be like, it's fine, Chriselle, you've got this, just keep going. Like, it really helped me because like, it's so frantic. I think talking to myself just really helped me just...
I bet they love that though. I bet that made for really good TV though. Emotional words. If you're not going to encourage yourselves, what about the, are you about to confirm everything that we suspected about Noel Fielding? was he really nice? Are they quite stressful to be around when...
Do you know what? It was actually a breath of fresh air. And I think having Matt and Noel there, because the tent can get very stressful, they're just there to have a little laugh with you. And actually, yes, they can come at a really stressful moment when you're baking, but it just reminds you, we're all there to have a bit of fun.
It's a game, it's a game.
Literally,
it's, okay.
it's a fun, lighthearted show. And actually, so anytime they came over, I was like, yeah, okay, I'm here to have fun. I'm not here to get stressed out. And I remember before I left for the tent, I was getting really stressed out. My sister said to me, they were like, Chriselle, I'd rather you go on the show, you go out on week one, but you've had the best time ever, then you make it to the final and you've been stressed out the whole time. And I was like, yeah, you're so right. So I think I went in being like, I'm going to focus on my bakes, but I'm also going to have a good time. And I think Matt and Noel really help you just sort of relax a bit, have a bit of a laugh and just remember that you're just there to have fun. So actually they were, yeah.
Of course it was in COVID. So did you have to self-isolate? You had to kind of go.
Oh, you were in the stations that were like miles away from each other.
Film it in kind of a big block.
Yeah. So I had to get 7 weeks signed off work. That was fun. Because I was working finance at the time. And I remember being like, when I got the call to say I was on the show, they were like, oh, do you think you can get time signed off work? I was like, yeah, we'll be fine. Obviously, I'm like, this will not be fine.
We'll figure it out. You just got to make it work.
Yeah.
And I remember when I had applied, I was like, well, I'm obviously not going to tell my manager I've applied for Bake Off because A, I'm not going to get on. And B, she'll be like, well, why have you applied for Bake Off when you've got a full-time job? Like, what's wrong with you? So I never even thought about it when I got on. I think that was one of the most stressed out moments I had was when I had to tell my team. So I like put in a call with my manager and I was just like, look, something's come up. It's kind of going to affect my work. Do you watch The Great British Bake Off? And she was honestly like the best reaction. She was like, oh my gosh, this is the best news ever. Like, I hope you win. So my plan was actually, I was going to tell her I'd applied for the show, gauge her reaction. And then, I don't know, cross that bridge. But she literally just got it straight away. She was like, oh my God, I can't believe you've got on the show. She was so supportive. So yeah, I had to get 7 weeks sign off work. My managers had to be part of my NDA, so the rest of my team didn't know. So they were like to my team.
Like something terrible's happened.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I hate to say it, but like in the corporate finance world, if you're taking sort of leave, and they were literally like, oh, Chriselle's going to be off work for a bit. We're not sure when she'll be back. Everyone was like,
she's had a serious breathing.
Yeah, or like stressed.
Yeah.
So they were like, oh, Chriselle, like, I hope you're okay. Take up all the time you need. And I was like, everyone, I'm fine.
I'm literally making cake in the cocktails.
Yeah. How many people were you able to tell? So your manager, obviously.
So my managers, the people I lived with, so like my immediate family. And then I could tell a small group of friends because anyone who I film my backstory, so you know when they're like, oh, Chriselle is at home with her family and whatever.
Yeah.
So we did that. And then also I felt really bad because there was a scene that I filmed with my friends doing Zumba, but they never aired it. And my friends were like, oh, we never got to be on TV. But because we filmed that, then I obviously told like a really close group of my friends, which I'm so glad I did because my friends are so nosy. So like, I remember when I got on the show, I hadn't told them initially, but I was like, I had so much prep to do. So I was like, oh, by the way, I'm not going to really be coming out that much because I've got work exams. And they were like, what do you mean work exams? Like, what work exams are they? I was like, you don't need to know. And they were already asking so many questions. And I was like, I cannot deal with them. They're so annoying.
Like, what are you hiding from us? Do you have this secret other group of friends that you're not telling us about?
Disappearing off the face of the earth for 7 weeks is quite...
Yeah. It's a lot.
It's a lot. It's
and
a
then
lot.
The worst thing is when I came back from filming, there was still like 2 months before the show aired. So it's another period of limbo. So I was going out to parties and chatting to people. And they're like, where have you been? I was like, yeah, you know, just work exams. And they're like, oh, what exams? I was like, just can you just stop?
Yeah, don't worry about it.
I didn't think this far down the conversation.
And then let alone how far you get in the competition, yeah. Not being able to talk about that.
Well, exactly. So then when it came out that I was on the show, I was just like, oh, just don't expect a lot. Because I was just also like, you know, whatever. I just don't want people to know. And I think I played it down so much when I went into work that after week one, my colleagues were, oh my gosh, Christelle, you made it to week two. And I was like, yeah.
Like, you're actually quite good.
But yeah.
Did you have a lot of people crawling out the woodwork when you got on the Bake Off or since? Like, kind of past figures, former friends, former flames.
I had a few former flames being like, oh, I saw you on TV. And I was like, ew, that's so cringe.
Go away.
Yeah. And I actually just didn't open their message. I was like, sorry, I got lost in my sea of DMs. I'm sorry, but like, I'm not a snob, but when it comes to old flames who have ghosted me, I'm not exactly going to be like, oh yeah, cool.
So no I just, bloody way.
I was like, I think that's quite embarrassing. But I think on the, do you know what? I actually had quite a nice positive experience, but like girls from my school who like, just I was never that close with, were like messaging me like, oh, I just want to say like you're doing so well. And I thought that was really sweet. Like, yeah. Just actually people just reaching out, like not like clout chasing or whatever, but just genuinely being very supportive. So I had more of that. And then obviously a few dodgy flames just resurfacing. And I was just like, let me just extinguish that. It's a bit embarrassing. Yeah.
None of that. How do you have it in your dating life now? Like, do you have men being like, oh my God, it's Christelle?
So interestingly... So I just use the standard dating apps. I just find things like Raya, which is like the kind of...
Cringe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I just think it's like the famous person one,
yeah.
Raya.
And I was like, get on it. And I was like, I just think it's a bit elitist, personally.
Yeah.
No offense. I'm sure people have used it and they've like found partners. But I just have a feeling there'll be a certain type of people on there.
Totally.
I don't know if I'm ready.
When you use the word elite, like as a choice on a dating app, then you're definitely going to get a certain kind of person. Like,
yes.
Yeah, exactly. They think you kind of like need a certain kind of pedigree to date
people
someone.
Who put themselves into that category.
Yeah, you know what I mean,
I'm elite. That's me.
Yes,
that's me.
It's a little bit. Yeah, so I just kind of use the standard apps, but I only started using them just because actually, to be fair, since the show, I've been really busy, and I was actually, do you know what? I do want to kind of get back on the scene. So I get a mixture. So some people on apps will literally be like, oh my gosh, is this you? What a poor Hollywood town feel like? And I'm like, oh, for God's sake. I'm like,
what is this town?
Yeah,
I'm not here for this.
Yeah, or some people will see me on an app and then they'll DM me like, hey, Christelle, saw you on an app. Like, do you want it? I'm like, that's not going to help.
The app is already there for you to message me on.
Yeah.
Also, like, it's like when people say, like, have you got an email? I'm like, yes. Oh, no, that's your agent's email. I was like, yeah, there's a reason that my agent's email is in the bio.
Exactly.
Because I want you to email them. So yeah. don't try and, like, yeah.
Yeah, so it's, so that's a bit of a weird one. But in terms of, like, obviously when I do meet someone, like, I genuinely don't think, like, I'm not like, a big star. I'm not like a big deal or whatever. So for me, I'm like... My job's my job. But equally, I'll never volunteer information like, oh, I've been on TV or Bake Off, just because I find the whole thing like quite cringe and like,
yeah, I can imagine.
It's just, I think when it comes to dating, I just sort of wish I worked in finance because it's just easier to talk about. Like,
yeah, yeah, totally.
Finance, cool, whatever, move on. Whereas now, so I'll be like,
it's quite mysterious to say, oh, what'd you do? I worked in finance.
Yeah.
And I just don't offer up any more information.
That's all I do. So what'd you do now? Not telling.
I think you're a spy.
Yes. Oh, that could be a good one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'll just now be like, oh yeah, I'm like a cook and a baker. And they're like, oh, cool. So what do you do? Like, do you have a restaurant? I'm like, no, like I develop recipes for like myself or brands or magazines. Like, oh, whatever. And then, yeah, so I was on a date. Actually, this is really funny. So I was on I was chatting to this guy on Hinge and then he was like, what do you do? I was like, oh, I cook and I bake. He goes, oh, your bake's like GBBO type bakes. And I was like, what do you know about Bake Off? And he was like, oh, I know they make really cool cakes on there, like invisible stuff. Are your cakes like that? Or do your cakes sink in the middle? I was like, oh, my cakes never sink in the middle. So I was like, okay, so he knows about Bake Off, but does he know? And he's playing it down. I was like, I just feel like he just didn't watch my season. So I was like, okay. And we ended up going on a date. And the date was going really well. And then I mentioned I worked in finance. He was like, oh, wait, so how did you get into food? And I was like, like just one day the stars aligned and I just ended up in food. He was like, no, you missed out on a big chunk.
There
like,
are steps here.
Yeah, and I was off, got taken. And I just had to obviously rip off the band-aid. I was like, well, I went on, the Great British Bake Off. And he was
the
like,
what? The what?
And he was like, wait, what? And he was like, wait, so you've been on TV? I was like, yeah. And I was like, because you said you watched Bake Off. He's like, yeah, I just must have missed your season. I was like, it's probably a good thing. I was like, that would have been so awful. So yeah, it's once I was actually on a date and I was on the tube with a guy and we were on our way back. And then this guy came up to me and said, oh, you Christelle from Bake Off? I was like, not now. And like, I honestly don't mind if people recognize me. It's fine. And people are really lovely. But I was like, do you know what? Like, I just felt so awkward.
Oh, when
you're
on a date
it.
And if you've not really broached that bit yet. Because I think it's probably quite hard when you're as accomplished as you are to not sound boastful when you're talking about your achievements. I think it's a natural thing when you have a job that is like incredibly interesting and you're clearly incredibly good at it for people to be like, oh, wow, she loves talking about that. if you still worked in finance and you were like, yeah, you know, I do this, people wouldn't be like, oh, God, she loves talking about her job, doesn't she?
But I also think, I mean, I don't like sweeping generalizations, but a lot of women are self-deprecating and I'm just definitely one of them and I'm just a self-deprecating person. So even in a normal situation, I just play down, but I'm just always like, oh, whatever, like it's not a big deal sort of thing. And so it's really funny. So even with that whole Bake Off thing, so we sort of mentioned it and then I was like, oh, I'm going to America next week. I was like, okay, cool, have a good holiday. And I get home and then he messaged me like, oh, I just found your Instagram. I was like, oh, okay.
Great.
And then he goes, oh, I didn't realise your holiday is actually a tour. And I was like, anyway, he goes, oh, you massively played yourself down. I was like, oh, did I? I was like, I thought I was quite clear, but it's just so awkward.
It's even more awkward when you try and do the fake humble thing.
Yeah,
it's just crazy. I don't know what people see in me. Like, what would have been really good is if the person had come up to you and mistook you for someone else. That would have been really funny.
God, no,
and you were ready to go, like, oh,
my God,
stop.
No, it was borderline. I'm not like that, like particular about the stuff. I was a bit like, it's quite inappropriate. So I was at carnival and this guy came up to me and he was like, oh, whatever, chatting. And then he was like, oh, I've watched your show. And I was like, really? I was like, no way. And I was like, oh, did they like baking? He was like, yeah, you were on that like Hindu matchmaking show, weren't you? I was like, excuse me. And I think the look on my face, it wasn't the fact that he mistook me for like someone else, more the fact I was like, you just seen a brown person and thought I was on a Hindi matchmaking show. I was like, oh, it's a bit awkward. So I just had this look on my face. He was like, oh, I messed up, haven't I? I was like, yeah, you have fun. I was like,
he jumped to that conclusion.
Off you go. Off you go. Off your shot now. We're done here.
So actually, I'm on a show with more viewers. So that's so strange.
It was quite funny. I had a laugh about it. But I was like, oh, God. Yeah.
Nightmare.
I think it's definitely the right way to do it is to like downplay all achievements though.
Like, yeah.
And even if I feel like it's good to own your achievements, be able to talk about them confidently. And it is probably just a thing of being worried about how people perceive you if you talk about them confidently.
Yeah.
That maybe we as people need to get over.
I know, but I do. I do think dating is just a bit of a weird one because it's like such a first impressions thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, like there's just I think I need to just figure it out, but it's, I just kind of wish I found someone before Bake Off.
My God. You don't know who's with you for the money.
Oh, God.
The fame.
The fame and the cake.
They want to go on tour.
Basically, yeah.
They want to be like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of who's a celebrity wag who goes on tour. Jay-Z.
Yeah, oh.
Just Jay-Z walking around. He's not a very good example, is he? He's more than just Beyonce's wag.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was like, ah.
I mean, that's what he is to me now.
I have actually a really funny story, not related to, but it's all related to dating, but this guy, I always get like, this one guy will reply to every one of my stories going, will you marry me? I just get a lot of weird DMs.
That's so funny.
Yeah. But some people are like very serious. This one guy messaged me like, hey, my name is XYZ. I'm 27 years old. I'm coming down to London when I've taken you on a date, whatever. And I just, because you can like see in your request, you don't actually have to open it. So I saw it and I was like, okay, I'm just going to leave it. And then he sent a follow-up and I was like, oh my gosh, like, please go away. Then he found my sister's Instagram that's private, messaged her going, hey, really want to take your sister out on a date. Please, can you like speak to her? And she was like, what is going on?
That's getting into scary
territory.
And
she was like very like scared. I'm like, I'm really sorry, that shouldn't have happened. Anyway, she just didn't reply and we left it. And the guy obviously just backed off. And then I went on a podcast like a few months ago and was speaking about it. So I spoke about the incident. The podcast airs. I then get a message the next day from the guy being like, hey, Chriselle, I heard your podcast, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I heard you speak about this guy that messaged you and your sister. I think that was me. I'm really sorry. That was my friend's idea, whatever. And then after that, then like a month later, I get another message like, hey, they're like reset the whole introduction, like want to take you on a date. I was like, what is going on?
Oh my God.
You haven't done your lesson here, pal.
Yeah.
Read the fucking
room.
So
inappropriate.
It's weird.
And you haven't replied to it once or even seen them?
No.
To any men out there who send persistent messages to women and they don't reply, please stop doing that.
Just don't.
A little bit.
Compliments, welcome. Persistent compliments with no response. Yeah. Creepy.
Also, another question. Well, this is a question because I think this is very inappropriate. I was in a work setting and I was abroad and like, so, and a couple of the people I'd been out for a meal with before, and we were chatting on a shoot and I was saying, oh, I love eating with people. Like we were talking about before because I like sharing food and whatever. So one of the people there said, oh, like, do you have any spare, like, 3 days while you're here? Like, we can grab food if you want a foodie part. And I was like, great, yeah, I've got this day, let's go. So we went, had loads of food, we're having a really nice merry old chat. And then I just said, oh, to the waitress, oh, can we get the bill? She goes, oh, your friend's already paid for it. And I was like, oh, wait, why did you do that? And he goes, oh, well, like, I low-key fancy you, and, like, I think you've got great personality. I was sort of hoping this would be a date. And I was like... I'm like, the thing is, like, he wasn't inappropriate in any context. He wasn't flirty.
Wasn't or,
like,
sleazy.
He or wasn't sleazy,
just
but...
strange.
I was a bit like, have you sort of taken advantage of just me wanting to eat? I don't know. I found the whole thing. I was very like, I feel very awkward now.
But it was just a manager, did you say? Or
no,
just
no, he wasn't.
Colleague?
No. He was just like, I was doing a shoot and it was someone on the shoot. But it was, we were in a work context.
Yeah.
So I thought we were just...
You would assume it was a
friendly thing. We were literally going out to eat food and like catching up. And I was like...
That's so weird.
Slightly weird.
It's...
I was like, and if you haven't been convinced, I'm hoping that if I buy this meal, you'll instantly fall in love with me.
Well, yeah, I'm just...
I feel like if you fancy someone, that's not the right way to play it.
Yeah, well, exactly. I just
especially
think
in a professional environment.
Yeah, it's because we met in a professional environment. And then he just, I think, I felt a bit like cheated. I was like, oh, you've massively deceived me. And I feel really awkward. But then I also don't know, like, maybe if I fancied him, it would have been a different story. Mm, like, if I actually thought, like, do you know, if we got on really well, I'd be like, okay, cool. But I don't know, though. I found the whole thing a bit weird.
Yeah, it's like taking agency away from you in quite a critical way.
I think so. I found it quite inappropriate.
Even, like, he could say, you know, he could say afterwards, once you joint paid the bill, you know, I don't know, this is crossing a line.
Yes,
but... yes. He could have said all of the exact same thing, but so long as he started it with that.
Yeah. I think that's it. He should have caveated.
And not paying the bill.
Yes, yeah.
Because then he's making it into a date when that was completely not the remit that you met him.
Yeah, I think that's it. And like, it was that. I think if he just said, like, I hope this isn't crossing the line, whatever, but he just didn't. He like went straight into it. And I was like, and the worst thing is, I like tell my sisters everything. So we left and I was like, I'm going to walk and I'm going to get a cab. And I got my phone out to my sister's voice. I'm like, oh my God, the weirdest thing just happened. Luckily I didn't because I turned around and he was right behind me. I was like, imagine it would have made it so awkward. But yeah, I know, it was fine.
Oh my God.
I know, yeah.
Horrendous.
So life goes on. The streets are very cold out here. You know.
That Mr. Right's coming, as long as he's not sliding into your DMs annoyingly or paying the bill.
Maybe it is that guy. Maybe Mr. Right's actually that guy.
Which guy?
The guy on your DM.
Oh, no!
Mr. Right does not message your sister.
Yeah.
He was there
no
all along.
Way.
Yeah, he was there the whole time.
Right under my eyes.
Yeah. Do you want to read some letters?
I think let's do some letters.
Let's do some letters. We've got some little agony aunt situation.
Oh my God, love this.
Okay, we'll start with this one specifically for Christelle. Which judge or host of the Bake Off would you call to let your hair down? Just let your hair down.
Well,
I guess this is probably hypothetical. Right?
Really?
So, well, if we're including the season that's about to air, then absolutely Alison Hammond.
Joking? My God, of course.
Yeah, no brainer.
I keep forgetting that she...
Oh my gosh, she is like my dream dinner party guest. So, I mean, she, like, I get good vibes of her. Have you seen the clip of her on This Morning where she like pushes someone into the water?
Yes, she's standing on the UK thing.
Yes. I just, everything about her, I love.
Have you worked with her before?
No, and I'm so sad. I wish I was doing the season because she's just such a great person. I know. I really hope I get to meet her one day because she's just wonderful.
I feel like you absolutely will. You'll pass across.
I hope so.
Do you get reunion parties?
Yeah, but it's usually amongst the bakers. I feel like the presenters and judges aren't really that involved, but I'll find a way. I feel like she's the absolute right person you can let your hair down with.
Yeah.
And I just, you can have a good laugh and like, she'll just, yeah.
An
if
icon.
Not her, then I think Noel is equally.
Great. Good choice.
Confirming
good choice.
Everything we thought.
thank you for the headline.
next up, blah, blah, blah. I hate my boss, help.
Ooh, this is vague. This is vague, but I like it because I think we've all had experiences with tricky bosses.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on a few factors, but firstly, are they doing something that is actively unprofessional that you can talk to somebody higher up or HR about?
Yeah.
Or is it just that your personalities do not gel? Because if it's just that your personalities do not gel...
There's nothing wrong with that, but it's slightly irritating to deal with every single day.
It makes your day-to-day pretty miserable.
Yeah.
The best way to do it is just to try and rise above it and have your best professional smiley face on, and then you can bitch to anyone about it in your personal life after the workday is done. If it's something where they're actively doing something wrong, then definitely seek help within your company. If it's a kind of startup where there is no HR or higher up people.
Yeah, that's the difficult situation.
I don't know.
I think, employment lawyer.
Because you were saying, because I remember someone said, when I started my first job, he said to me, he was like, you need to like your team because you will spend more time with your team than you will with your own family. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I definitely had instances, I actually had an incredible team, but there were definitely times when like, you know, there was like someone, whether it was a manager or whatever, and for some reason there was just something off. And I remember being like really down about it because I was like, this is my day-to-day like life. Mm. Like you're spending so much time with someone, if something's off. So I just had a conversation. I was like, look, am I doing something wrong? And I think if you kind of play it that way, you're not being like, you're being a pain. You're like, oh, have I done something wrong? I just want to make sure because it seems like I keep on disappointing you or whatever. And then sometimes it turns out that, like, oh, I'm really sorry. I was just going through a bad time and I took it out on you. And I just sometimes think it's just good to have the conversation with that person directly, even if it is your boss, because that I think sometimes, like, it is sometimes good to like go to someone more senior, but then it's almost like, are you sort of like, you're talking about them and then they're like, oh, you know, Chriselle complained about you. And they're like, why didn't you just speak to me?
And then it might make it more difficult.
And I think if you, like, if there's a way to do it, right? So it's, I think, you know, you're not saying like, oh, sorry, but you've been really difficult. It's like, oh, just want to just check in. Like, you know, I don't know if I've done something, whatever. And then there's a way to talk about it and hopefully you can resolve it. But I think if you've got a problem with a colleague or a boss, you have to sort it out because it will make your job miserable.
It'll make the environment really toxic as well.
Yeah, massively. Like, yeah. A big part of your job is actually the people you work with. And if the people, like, if you don't have like good colleagues or if you don't get on with your colleagues, I think your job becomes really miserable. Mm.
Totally. So I think in the workplace and in all relationships generally, lots of times people have no idea how they're coming across.
Yeah. Mm.
If they're going through their own stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They'll sometimes be short with you or they'll kind of go about something in a way that they're not even thinking that they're doing it inappropriately. They'll have no idea that it's hurt your feelings.
Yes.
And this is literally me and Hannah laugh about it every episode. We're like, just communicate better with people. The only way to resolve any situation is communicating. So if you tell someone, actually, I feel like you're a bit stressed and is there anything I can do to help you? Then they might be like, oh God, I'm sorry that I've been putting that on you.
If they're a reasonable person, if they're not, get a new job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also that.
So if you all say communicate and I'll be like, block, delete, move on. It's all of the questions, like, dump them. Get a new job.
Yeah, I'm always like, you should like have a think about it.
I'm just ruthless. I've got no time.
Dump
for
block. Love it.
Dump block, move on. We'll end on this one, hopefully, like a little bit of a end on a little hopeful note, although it's just saying quite depressing, but like we can end on a hopeful note. I'm struggling with trying to start dating after the end of a long relationship at the start of the year. After very little success or attention on dating apps and the like, I'm struggling to see myself as someone who would be someone's first choice. Oh, baby.
Oh.
I'm surrounded by friends in long-term relationships. Do you have any tips for boosting your romantic self-esteem?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I am that, basically kind of that person. Like, all my friends are, like, in relationships or like getting engaged or moving in. And I'm, like, the common denominator single person. So anytime someone breaks up, I'm like, join the club. I'm here. Whatever. Well, a few things I would say is, first, I think in anytime you get into a relationship, my take on relationships is like, I'm in a place now where I am like so happy being single and alone and independent. If I'm going to bring someone into my life, they should make me happier. They shouldn't make me happy. You should never rely on someone to be happy. You should rely on yourself to be happy. And so for me, dating a guy is like a little added bonus to my life. And obviously I want to end up with someone, but I just want them to make me happier. So I think the first thing I would say to this girl is like, make sure like you are happy in yourself, and you don't necessarily, you don't need to be with someone to make you happy. And I think you, and I think when you come out of a breakup, there's the healing and stuff and getting over your ex, but then it's also like coming to terms with like yourself being, because obviously when you're in a relationship, you do end up relying on that person for a lot of stuff, or you share a lot of stuff with that person. So when you come out of it, you're like, who do I share this stuff with? And I think you need to go through a period where you're like, actually, I'm okay sharing this stuff, you know, on my own and having a good time and like coming to terms with like being a single person. And like, and so for me, I've been single for such a long time. I'm like so comfortable in my own skin now. And I think once you get to that point and you sort of have confidence in yourself, you will then kind of have a bit more self-worth. And so you're then, when you sort of put yourself into the dating world, I think for me, I sort of went into it like, I'm just going to go on some like first dates just to like start talking to men again and just to have a bit of fun. But like, I think you have to put yourself into the mind of like, I am sort of in the driving seat here, and I'm going to kind of go out and kind of go on dates with these men and just be very judgmental, basically. And because you can't do that. And it's quite nice. And I think, but I think you definitely have to like first start in a place of having a lot of self-worth and like a bit of confidence in yourself. Yeah. I'm not saying you have to like have like the best self-esteem in the world, because not many people do. But like, I think just coming to terms with like your own happiness and like your own self-worth, I think, is really, really important. And I think that will massively help you. Yeah, like it will drive a lot of like your future relationships or just dating and putting yourself out there. I think it will become a lot easier. So like even the mindset of saying, you know, I don't think I'm people's first choice, it's because like you don't have, you need to build up that confidence, because you definitely are. Mm. But you just need to have that confidence to know that you are someone's first choice. And if someone doesn't like you, then it's their loss.
Yeah.
So
if you can't love yourself, how are you going to love someone else?
Yes.
Thanks, Rue.
Exactly.
Thank you, Rue. It's so funny. Yeah, because I have, last time I was on dating apps was maybe about 4 years ago. And I think it's really, really easy to become quite jaded, because I can guarantee you, although maybe you don't feel like you're getting a lot of attention on the apps, I can guarantee you that a lot of the people that have swiped left on you, if they met you in person, they wouldn't. You know what I mean?
Totally.
So
it's
much of it is
an accurate picture of who actually thinks you're a catch.
Yeah. If they met you, they would be like, oh my God, she's amazing. But, or he, I don't know who's written in. But I just don't take it too personally, because it's incredibly vapid. Like, who knows, like, when, I would really actually love to, next time we get a guy on the podcast, ask them what they're looking for in dating apps. Like, whether they read the bios, like, what they look for in pictures,
I'm going to ask this to my next Hinge day. Like, what about my profile did you like?
What about,
what about me? Let's just quick
give
appraisal.
Me so what I have learned is, so one guy was telling me that he saw a girl's profile and she was just pouting in every photo. He was like, I just, no. And I was like, I mean, I don't really pout, but I was like, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That was like a massive turn off. I was like, okay, that's something.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
It's so hard to know how what you're putting across on a dating app lands. Mm. And it may not be how you think it's coming across.
Interestingly, so for me, for example, like there are some really, really hot guys on dating apps, but like the way they've done their profile is they know they're good looking. So I'm like,
bad
I know
vibe.
You're going to be... So like their first photo is them
selfie
like topless.
Or, holding a fish.
Holding a fish. But for me, it's actually, it's like the topless photos. I'm like, especially if it's their first one, I'm like, yeah, you've got a great body and like you're really hot. But like that gives me the it, because you clearly know you're good looking and you think that like arrogance is like, honestly, makes me so sick. So I'm like, no, can't do it. So I think, and those guys are probably there like, oh, I'm such a catch. I'm like, well, yeah, you're good looking, but like you're...
What else are you bringing?
Yeah, like your Hinge profile is actually like not selling you very well.
I think I would only accept a topless photo in that scenario if it was further down the list and it was like them on the beach
with friends.
Their friends laughing.
Yes. It's wholesome.
Or like on a fishing trip.
There must be laughter.
They're on a fishing boat.
They're all laughing.
He's holding big fish and he's laughing. Or like his wetsuit's half peeled down.
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
Oh, you know? I like that.
All right.
But see, that's a suggestion.
A suggestion,
then you can
kind
of
like... Yeah. There's a story
there. A little bit of my
I'm saying this as someone who has not been on dating apps ever and is not single.
I am
this is what I'd be looking for.
I am so, so happy to have dodged the ear of dating apps with the voice note feature. That gives me the
Oh, my God. It's the worst
the pressure.
Thing. Oh, my God. It's disgusting. So I once matched with this guy and then he just sent me like 3 voice notes, and I just was like,
I didn't know you could send them.
You can send them as So I just didn't reply. I was like, I'm too creeped out by this. And then he sent me, he was like, oh, everything okay? And then he messaged me, everything okay? I was like, sorry, the voice notes just threw me off. And then he sent me 3 more voice notes going, hey, yeah, fully get that, you know, you're a bit thrown off by the voice notes. It's just my way of communicating, but we can do something else if you prefer. And I was like, what's wrong with you?
You've blown it already.
What? You just don't listen to a single... I literally said, the voice notes threw me off, and then you sent me 3 more voice notes.
You just not listened to the boundary I quite clearly set.
Yeah. I hate it when someone sends 3 separate voice notes, but it's just like 3 separate words.
Yes.
Hey, how are you?
Voice note etiquette should be written about in more detail because sometimes I receive voice notes that are like 4 minutes long. That my sister did the other day, and then she immediately followed up being like, oh my fucking God, I'm so sorry I just did that. Please play that in 1.5.
Oh, I listen to all my voice notes in 1.5, sometimes 2, because my sister speaks really slowly and sends me really long voice notes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My sister Fred just had a baby and is like walking around slowly, and that's like the best she can do at the moment. So I was like, I appreciate the self-awareness also, and also you're allowed.
Yeah.
Literally, you of all people are allowed. I hope that helps. Literally, we have no idea what guys are looking for, and so much of it and what makes you a special and wonderful and very dateable person is in who you are, how you hold yourself. But yeah, I agree with you, Christelle. Like, the love's got to come from within first, because I think that people can smell, or not smell, but like, they can sense when you, also bad people can sense if you're insecure and not really loving yourself, and they'll take advantage of your niceness and your insecurity.
All the time.
But like, whenever I kind of come out of a relationship and I'm kind of like feeling myself, like people can sense it. Then you like, people kind of like gravitate towards you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I hope that helps. We believe in you, and I'm sure you'll find someone who appreciates you for who you are.
It's going to turn around.
Yeah. But anyway, I think that's all we've got time for. Leave it on a lovely little positive note. Aww. Christelle, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. This has been so much fun, and I have been well fed and well...
Watered.
Watered.
Well watered, well hydrated.
Well booched.
So. Yes, well booched. So thank you.
Everybody go and buy Flavor Kitchen.
Buy the book.
It's a phenomenal book. Is there anything else that you would like to push?
Literally just, I mean, there's nothing else I can really book push right now. So just a book. book.
Is there anywhere that you would like them to buy it from that is the best?
Amazon or Waterstones. I know everyone hates Amazon. So if you don't like Amazon, then Waterstones. Okay. And if you do like it, please leave a review. It really helps.
Can you leave a review having not read it?
If you've bought it, not read it. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
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 Do it. Speaking of leaving reviews, if you have liked this podcast,
leave
a review, give it a rating, subscribe. It helps everyone find the podcast and helps us keep making it.
Woo.
So if you've enjoyed it, please tell us. Thank you so much, Christelle.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week.
See you next week for another podcast. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.